The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening. And enjoy the show.
Welcome to Season 7, Episode 7 of Horror Hill. If you're just joining us, I am your host, Eric Peabody. We have two stories for you this evening that go to show you that nostalgia can be a real bitch sometimes. You ever notice how experiences are often remembered more fondly than they actually were? There's something about the passage of time that can peel away unpleasantness from a memory, leaving you with only those bloody rose-colored glasses. These two tales are prime examples of that. Oh, and I almost forgot. We have something extra succulent for you all to sink your teeth into. Next Thursday, October 27th, we're going to have a live Horror Hill episode. That's right, folks. I'm inviting you all to come down into my virtual basement with me so I can read you a scary story. We're not announcing the title just yet, but I can tell you that you're in for a treat. Once again, this will be next Thursday, October 27th, at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Keep an eye on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, where we'll have an official announcement shortly. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy ad-free versions of this and hundreds of other tales from our audio archives dating back to 2012, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today to get instant access from our friends at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Did I mention they're ad-free? Thank you for your support. And now, from author Michael Tolman, I give you The Marionette's Macabre. The woman awoke with a yelp of pain and fear as he watched her through a hole in the curtain. Her arms and legs bound her to the center seat in the front row of the old theater, tied tight and secured in place. Giuseppe stifled a giggle with his hand from behind the moldy, age-worn stage curtain as his excitement grew. He finally had an audience. Giuseppe was nervous, but still filled with the giddy emotions of an artist about to unveil their work to the masses. He returned to the controls and began fiddling with them, double and triple checking the movements of his creations as they hung, waiting for his commands. The lines were responding. The stage was set, so Giuseppe straightened his tie and walked through the curtain to announce the beginning act of his show. Cassie cried out when she woke up. Her arms and legs were tied painfully to whatever she was sitting on. Her throat and neck were sore. She remembered big hands grabbing her from behind, enveloping her neck and squeezing until she blacked out. That had seemed like only moments before, yet she felt as if she had slept for 10 hours or more. She shook her head, trying to clear the fuzz and the fog that muddled her thoughts and slowed her mind to a crawl. She struggled to think clearly and strained to focus her eyes. She struggled to orient herself and quickly realized she must have been drugged after she passed out. It was the only explanation she could think of for her groggy state. The haze was oppressive, and the throbbing ache behind her eyes almost made her sick. She sat up straighter, closing her eyes, and took deep breaths through her nostrils to center herself and get a grip on her swimming thoughts and churning stomach. She opened her eyes slowly, breathing evenly despite the urge to vomit. The urge passed, and Cassie could finally focus and see where she was. She sat in the middle of an old theater, tied to a seat directly in front of the stage. Many of the seats around her were missing or damaged, and the whole place reeked of mold and mildew. The large curtain was drawn, and Cassie could see that years of dust and accumulated filth had caked the bottom. This was probably the old Gestalt Theater downtown, a building slated for destruction due to its unsafe conditions. The corpse of the once proud stage lay silently in its tomb after years of neglect. The rot had begun to eat away at many of the wooden fixtures around the theater, contributing in no small amount to the atmosphere of foreboding that saturated this lonely, forgotten place. On top of being kidnapped, she now had to cope with the anxiety of being held captive in a building that was falling apart and might collapse at any moment. Cassie tested her restraints, but they were tight and held firm. They bit into her skin, and she felt the tips of her toes and fingertips going slightly numb. Cassie closed her eyes as a small, pitiful moan hummed against her pursed lips, and tears began to fall down her cheeks. All frightening ideas sprang to mind in that moment of fear, and she fought to maintain control of herself, lest she fall into hysterics and potentially upset the maniac that had captured her. Would she live? Would she be tortured? Maybe they'd use a gun and do it quickly. Would they rape her first? Would whoever had captured her violate her body after killing her? She had no clue as to the identity of her attacker, but she had little doubt that it had to be a man. The hands that had grabbed her from behind had been big and strong, roughly calloused and with the vice-like grip of a man who worked with them regularly. Cassie noticed that the sedative she had been dosed with was beginning to wear off when the curtain parted suddenly. A big man came out in an ill-fitted suit and tailcoat. He was average in height, but his shoulders and chest were wide, and he boasted a large gut that threatened to burst out of the confines of his shirt. The tailcoat looked old and second-hand, and as the man approached the stage, she saw more of his features. He had a balding pate, and what black hair he possessed was shiny and slicked back with grease. He had a bulbous nose and thick jowls, and his pudgy face seemed to jut forward in that unflattering way it does sometimes when someone becomes too obese. His big lips were dry and visibly cracked, and he looked sweaty and moist. His dark eyes looked wild, full of life, and had an unsettling energy despite the deeply etched crow's feet that were carved through his aging features. When he reached the edge of the stage, he stood erect, his gut protruding out as he clasped his meaty hands behind his back. Cassie had glimpsed them before they had disappeared behind their owner. They'd been as rough and intimidating in their appearance now as they had when they'd been wrapped around her neck. She swallowed as he smiled at her, her throat still sore and tender. His legs seemed a bit scrawny in comparison to his large belly and heavily muscled arms and chest, almost gangly and giving him a nearly cartoonish presence. The man was the epitome of the creeper stereotype that Cassie and her catty girlfriends made fun of all the time. Only now she was face to face with that very archetype and completely at his mercy.
"Welcome, my dear, to the greatest show you will ever see in your lifetime," the man said in a powerful, booming voice, despite his less than impressive appearance. "I apologize for the unpleasant accommodations, but I doubt you would have accepted a formal invitation, and I must have an audience for my first performance."
Cassie gulped, terrified by the man's easy and nonchalant manner, as he began to pace while continuing to speak in his deep, baritone voice. He was Italian, his accent clear and unmistakable.
"You see, madame, I am perhaps the greatest puppeteer the world has ever known. I am pleased to bring you a performance that is the culmination of more than a century's worth of old-world tradition, with a generous splash of my unique flair. I am Giuseppe Alonso Favero."
He bowed deeply as he said this, his bulbous nose coming very close to the floor despite his large gut.
"And I am descended from a long line of craftsmen and puppeteers that lived in the old country. My grandfather emigrated to this great nation from Italy, bringing the traditions our family has observed for generations."
Cassie wanted to scream at him. She wanted to yell and shout that she didn't give a damn about his stupid puppets or his family's traditions, and that he needed to let her go. She remained silent, however. She held her tongue, too petrified to speak. She knew immediately that this man was unstable and dangerous, clearly capable of physical violence and wildly unpredictable. No sane person would stalk, strangle, and kidnap a young woman to put on a puppet show, of all things.
"I truly hope you enjoy the night's entertainment, my dear," Giuseppe said as he drew himself up once more. "And without further ado, it is my pleasure to present to you my masterpiece. I present to you The Marionettes Macabre."
Giuseppe turned and walked through the curtain again. Moments later, the moldy curtain began to move, shaking more dust and filth off onto the stage as it drew apart. The backdrop had been there for as long as the rest of the theater had. Cassie saw the silhouettes of two large puppets hanging from strings that ran up towards the ceiling and out of sight. They hung lifeless, still and silent as they awaited their master's commands. Cassie forgot her fear for just a moment and marveled at Giuseppe's ingenuity. Working alone, clearly out of his mind, the man had managed to string up two human-sized marionettes and run their strings up to the rafters, and was presumably intent on controlling them by himself from wherever he was behind the stage. Cassie's curiosity ended a moment later and her terror returned threefold when the lights came on and the puppets began to move. Her eyes grew wide as the ballet of movement on the stage began, and she saw the marionettes for what they truly were. They were dead. The man had strung up two dead bodies and was now puppeteering them across the stage. They jerked and wobbled as their strings moved their arms and legs in an eerie parody of life. The one on the right was a thin man, pale and waxy, with shoulder-length brown hair that looked like it was tied up in a bun. The corpse to the left was a woman with a bright blue pixie haircut and was even more rail-thin than the body next to her. Their features were waxy and empty, and they wore simple clothes that looked like handmade costumes for an old-world peasant couple. Simple brown trousers and a white shirt adorned the man, and a plain brown dress garbed the young woman. Cassie's heart raced as she watched the body's pantomime human expression, their heads lolling and flopping back and forth. An unsettling score accompanied them, one of those typical jaunty affairs people usually heard when watching old silent films that could only dub music over the action. It went on in the background while the corpses traipsed across the stage in their disturbing performance. These were people, dead people, and their corpses were being used as nothing more than toys for this sick, unhinged psychopath. They dangled morbidly. Their strings, hooked into their bodies somehow, allowed Giuseppe to manipulate the corpses and use them like his playthings. Their movements were very much like those of real puppets, but that made the gestures and swaying all the more unnerving. Time passed unnoticed, the horror of what Cassie was witnessing distorting her perceptions and making her lose focus on reality as her mind reeled in terror. The cavorting cadavers eventually bowed on their strings, signaling an end to the ghastly display. The curtain slowly closed on the scene, revealing the two desecrated bodies. The sounds of footsteps sounded throughout the theater. Cassie's heart thundered louder as she prepared for what was to come next. Giuseppe suddenly approached from the right, emerging from backstage with a knife in his hand. Cassie began to panic, begging and pleading with him to spare her. His eyes were mirthful as he came at her, and Cassie's fear intensified with each step that he took. Cassie stared at her wrists, where the ropes dug in, as the puppet master set the knife on the stage. He thanked her profusely and apologized for the accommodations he had provided. She sobbed and winced as he reached her, readying herself for the onslaught of violence and pain that was about to ensue. Giuseppe merely chuckled at her antics, like a patient parent watching a child's tantrum, as he took hold of her bindings one by one and cut her free.
"I'm sure you understand, Estella, that I had very limited resources to work with in order to put on this grand performance, but I truly hope you will tell the world of the wonders you have seen tonight and the scope of my genius. I can count on you for an excellent review, my dear, can't I?"
His face fell once he noticed her terrified look and how she cradled her aching wrists. Cassie sat motionless, her right hand clasped around her other wrist as she stared dumbfounded at the disturbed Giuseppe. She didn't know what to say.
"I really do apologize for that," Giuseppe said with genuine sincerity as he nodded at her marks. "It's just, I've spent years by myself trying to uphold my family's traditions and make them new and exciting. Before the rest of the world was ready to accept my gift, I knew I needed to convince at least one other person to prove I was not totally crazy." You don't think I'm crazy, do you? You can see the brilliance of what I've done here, yes? She stared in wide-eyed astonishment. He rambled on a bit more like this, his thoughts and reasoning seeming to erode several degrees in a matter of moments as he made less and less sense. Now that Giuseppe's ghoulish puppet show was over and he had relinquished some of his control, his mind simply scattered, and she now watched a very sick man verbally stumble like a doddering toddler trying to pick up small toys in a nursery. This was a dangerous, sick person who was deeply and violently disturbed. Yet, he seemed so helpless and lost as he pleaded and begged for approval or acknowledgement from her. Cassie found herself pitying the man, despite her very real fear of him. His incoherent ramblings ceased, and now Giuseppe watched her with the eyes of a vulnerable young boy. He looked like a teen who was waiting for the girl he had just asked out to either reject or accept his invitation. Cassie didn't know how to respond. She was shaking and traumatized beyond belief. But at that moment, she dared to hope that the right words would see her through the night and that freedom from this lunatic was close at hand.
I don't...
She struggled to speak, her fear of him encouraging her to choose her words carefully, lest she provoke him.
I think it's really something, you know. I'll tell everyone how interesting it was, okay?
Giuseppe beamed as he found some of his old, slightly more coherent self.
I knew you would see the genius of my work. I watched you, and I knew you were the right person. I can recognize people with good taste. And you were the perfect person to witness my debut. Evviva!
Cassie watched him clap his hands and pump his fists in the air in triumph. She thought about what he had said about watching her and grew even more disturbed at the idea of him stalking her for God knows how long before tonight. Perhaps part of his decision to go after her was due to her tendency to walk alone to her car in the dark hours after her shifts at the hospital. Her mother had told her she would be a target for muggers or rapists if she did so, but she had brushed it off as the worries of a protective parent and had always felt so sure that it wouldn't happen to her. She was strong and independent and had experience in self-defense. So her confidence in her ability to fend off any would-be attacker had been nigh absolute. That confidence was gone now, and Cassie knew in her gut that she would never be the same after this. Cassie found herself being led to some old rusted doors behind the stage as Giuseppe said a few more pleasantries and thanked her profusely. She moved instinctively, her mind in a haze as she stepped out of the old theater into the parking lot. The door closed behind her, and Cassie found herself alone at last, still clutching her right wrist and staring at nothing. She saw her car parked nearby. She realized for the first time that she held something in her right hand. Giuseppe had handed her the keys as he had walked her out, but until then, she hadn't noticed. She felt split in two, her body going through the motions of entering the car and driving away, as her thoughts circled madly, trying to orient herself after her traumatic night. She went to the police and reported everything, and within less than 2 hours, Giuseppe was in cuffs, and an ambulance was removing the bodies from the theater. Cassie didn't return to work for 2 weeks, and when she did, she demanded a day shift and told the hospital that she would not work nights anymore. Even with the bright sun shining and with people bustling about, Cassie found walking to her car almost impossible without having a panic attack. She saw a trauma counselor and took some anti-anxiety medications for a month and a half. Within a surprisingly short amount of time, she found herself living her life almost as normally as she had before the incident. She had drinks with friends and saw Jim, but no one in her life could know that no matter how much she seemed to be moving on, those corpses still danced in the theater of her mind endlessly, from the moment she got up to the moment she fell asleep. The scratchy, eerie vinyl haunted her thoughts as the specters of the dead gallivanted through her imagination and her dreams. She had vivid nightmares of a 10-foot-tall Giuseppe chasing her and stringing her up to make her dance and cavort for his demonic pleasure. Large, wicked hooks dug into her still-living flesh and tugged at her bones, enslaving her to the puppet master's will. Cassie had refused to testify in court. It would make little difference to the prosecuting attorney, as Giuseppe hadn't denied any of his charges after his arrest. However, Cassie did manage to brave the courtroom once, in disguise. She wanted to see what he was like now that he was caught. In the trial, Giuseppe revealed that he had stolen the bodies from the morgue at the hospital that employed her. He had been a janitor there for several years, and somehow managed to spirit away the two cadavers without raising the alarm. The fact that Giuseppe hadn't murdered those people only made her feel slightly better, but the knowledge that he had been watching her while working in the same place for so long had unnerved her immensely. He may not have killed anyone, but Giuseppe was clearly a man who was extremely mentally ill and willing to commit violent acts in order to appease his warped obsession. He had been looking at her for several seconds when she finally noticed him staring. He smiled slightly as he looked curiously at her for one long, drawn-out moment. Her heart jumped, and that familiar body shiver of tingling fear washed over her from the top of her head all the way down to the small of her back. Cassie's pulse raced, and she almost started hyperventilating. He kept staring and smiling at her, as his attorney's words about his insanity drifted on and on, becoming background noise to the thundering fright that gripped Cassie's soul. "Does he recognize me?" she thought to herself as her mind reeled in panic and terror. "How long has he been looking? Oh God, oh fuck, oh shit, shit, fuck, shit. Why did I come? I told them that I wouldn't testify, and here I am anyway, right where that creep can just stare at me all he wants." Giuseppe looked away to acknowledge something the judge was clarifying, and the iron grip of fear released its vise on her throat. She relaxed a bit as she realized he hadn't recognized her after all. Her fear didn't leave entirely, however, and within 5 minutes, Cassie was in her car sobbing to herself as she sat alone in the center of the parking lot under some dark trees. After that, Cassie's life fell apart. She stopped working and stopped leaving her home unless it was absolutely necessary. She stopped engaging with her friends and family, and Jim left her after nearly 3 weeks of being ignored. All but her closest friends stopped visiting. They stopped attempting to bring her out of the spell of despair that held sway over her. Cassie felt broken, afraid, and paralyzed. Every day was a constant battle to keep the visions and fear away until she could sleep again. She slept often and had gotten a prescription for anti-anxiety medication and a powerful opioid by lying to her doctor about chronic pain in her wrists. She lived in a haze of drugs that diminished her as much as her lack of nutrition from barely eating. The dreams started coming more frequently. The visions of dancing corpses strung up by a cackling puppet master began to captivate her. Her fear began to turn to morbid fascination. Cassie began to daydream about the show Giuseppe had performed for her. It horrified and disgusted her, and yet she was becoming obsessed with the images that plagued her fragile mind. They laughed at her from their strings and beckoned her to join them in death and madness. Cassie drew them, sketching out gangly figures on strings between her long bouts of drug-induced, unrestful sleep. Giuseppe was pronounced insane and committed to a hospital for life. He had boasted and bragged about his great skill and creativity at the sentencing, condemning the judge and the court itself for being too narrow-minded to see the brilliance of his act. Cassie had heard this from someone who had come by to see her recently, but she couldn't remember who it had been. The news of Giuseppe's sentence had caught her ear, though she hardly remembered anything else from the interaction. Cassie's nightmares shifted after hearing this, her point of view changing from the hapless witness, or one of the puppets, to that of the puppet master, seeing the same scenes from above as she made the bodies dance with her own hands. The news of Giuseppe's death a week later came in the form of a phone call from her mother. She told Cassie that another patient at the hospital had attacked him and had crushed his skull with a television ripped from its mounting on the common area wall. She had been keeping tabs on the monster that had terrorized her daughter, hoping that the knowledge of his death would help Cassie out of her deep depression. She had no way of knowing that this was the worst news Cassie could have received in her vulnerable state. She began to buy dolls and puppets excessively, hanging them from her ceiling by strings until her apartment looked like a forest of little hanging people. Cassie started to mourn Giuseppe's death, feeling as though she had lost someone important to her. The dreams turned more violent. Giuseppe would sometimes appear with bleeding eyes, bowing and thanking her for her praise and adoration. The corpses on their strings began to cackle and wail, attacking one another as they tore at their flesh. They dismembered each other as they hung in the air and fought for the limelight in the theater of her dark dreams. Cassie was no longer satisfied with her dolls or her dreams. She needed something real to placate her obsession with the morbid fantasies that now dominated her life. It wasn't enough anymore. Giuseppe had been a genius. She had just been too stubborn and blind to see it at first. She began with stray cats that she lured into her apartment, putting them at ease by feeding and petting them until they relaxed in her lap, before wrenching their heads around to break their necks. Her arms were cut and scratched by the struggling animals that fought for their lives as she clumsily and callously ended them. She strung up three with makeshift marionette strings and walked them throughout her home, giving them voices and names to act out little dramas to entertain her now deranged mind. Animals weren't enough either, and soon Cassie was cleaning herself up as best she could and browsing social media sites and dating apps for something that would appease her dark, twisted desires. Twice, she went on dates and put on her best show of acting interested in the men she was with, but could not isolate them in a secluded enough area to strike out and incapacitate them. Her day of triumph finally came when Jim knocked on her door. He had come to see her one last time in an attempt to reason with her. She waited until he asked for some water to launch her attack. She knew hitting someone on the head to render them unconscious was no simple task, but with her need driving her and two blows to his head with a cast iron skillet, she managed to subdue Jim within moments. Jim woke up with a throbbing pain in his head. The hurt was so overwhelming that he didn't notice the stabbing pain in his arms at first. Only when he attempted to move them did he feel the pain of what Cassie had done to him. Agony tugged at his arms just above the wrists. His eyes finally came into focus, and Jim saw what had been done to him. Slits had been cut deep into the tops of his forearms, allowing wires to be looped around his bones, hanging him from the ceiling by some makeshift contraption. He tried to move his legs, but the soles of his feet had been stuck to the carpet with copious amounts of super glue. He moaned as he struggled against his unconventional restraints, but his struggling ceased as Cassie entered the room. She took up the wires that stretched across the living room by the two wooden spoons tied to the ends. Jim pleaded with her and begged to know why she was doing this to him. Without responding, she sat on the waiting chair and began tugging on his wires to flail his arms about as he screamed in torment. She smiled as he wailed, amused by her work but not quite satisfied. Giuseppe had made such ingenious marionettes. Hers was simple and crude. Eventually, the police arrived due to all the noise. They entered the apartment with guns drawn while shouting at Cassie to put her hands above her head. They snipped the wires quickly, but they were forced to painstakingly cut him free from the carpeted floor with scissors before Jim could be rushed to the hospital and treated. Cassie was taken to the police station and questioned. She sat silently during the interrogation, staring down at her lap without acknowledging anyone. They tried sending in the officers and the detective that had taken her statement and helped her the night of her own capture in an attempt to elicit some sort of response from her. Her therapist had even been brought in to try and reach her. The detective gave them the room. After pleading with her for half an hour, the therapist finally got her to make eye contact. "There's no judgment here, Cassie. You know that. Please, please just talk to me. We can't help you if you don't talk to us. Please, just start with what you were feeling and thinking. Why? Why did you do what you did to Jim?" She stared for a long, long moment. Her eyes looked full of pain and yet somehow empty at the same time. Her dry lips parted, and she spoke only once before falling silent again. "I just wanted to see them dance again. Just one more time. It was beautiful. So beautiful. I just want to see them one more time."
You've been listening to The Marionettes Macabre by Michael Tolman. You can find more of this author's work on Amazon, where they have recently released a collection called Darkness, an Omnibus of Horror. Our second tale takes us back to our youth. A lot of us remember having a great time eating pizza, playing arcade games, and watching an animatronic band bang out Yakety Yak at one of the many Novelty Kids Pizza Party palaces. The protagonist in this story sure remembers his time there fondly. When offered a chance to regain a bit of that nostalgia for himself, while providing the same feeling to others, well, it's an offer that he can't refuse. However, maybe some deals really are too good to be true.
From author Blake Blizzard, I give you, Please, Chuck E. Cheese, Please. Do you remember Showbiz Pizza? Where a kid could be a kid? I saw the television commercials and print advertisements everywhere, but had none of these stores near me. I grew up in a remote area of the country. The nearest town was a good 30-minute drive. In that town, we did have a pizza chain and we did have a decent arcade. Showbiz, though, Showbiz combined these two. And they had their own band that greeted you and provided entertainment as you devoured just fine pizza and pounded away at the arcade cabinets of the day. One of the ads that was burned into my brain was of a bear-like mascot surrounded by a loving family, as if someone's taking a group picture of them. Pizza is on the table, one slice missing, several pitchers of ice-cold pop, and plates ready to hold their phenomenal pizza. The text above the ad says, Save your family from boredom at Showbiz Pizza. Save your family. I could only live through these commercials and advertisements until my family and I visited a relative a few states away one summer. This was coming up to my mid-pre-teen years. A few copycat pizza arcades popped up, and as luck would have it, we were going to one the day we arrived. Major Magics. Same concept as Showbiz. Pizza, arcade, fun, and the animatronic band. I'll never forget the excitement when I entered the door. The smell of pizza and popcorn. The arcade sounds. The never-ending whirl of tickets being ejected from skee-ball and whack-a-mole games. It's what I always dreamed of. While we finished up our pizza dinner on a table set for what must have been about 12 of us, I eyed the stage in the far left corner of the main floor. I saw it when I entered, assuming there would be some kind of show later, but no presentation was had. No show, no music, no band. There was a giant red curtain that blanketed a semicircle wooden stage. As a kid, the age of around 10 or 11, I was overcome by curiosity and decided to see what was behind the curtain, Wizard of Oz style. I can clearly remember finishing my third slice of pepperoni pizza. I'm sure it was awful, but at the time, pizza was pizza to a kid, right? I put the crust down. Why did we hate the crust as kids? It's like my favorite part now as an adult. And wiped the corners of my mouth with my already pizza sauce-soaked napkin. I slyly looked around the table. All of the adults were talking amongst each other. My cousins were either still pigging out or already on to play another game. This was my chance to join the band behind the curtain. I would be a part of something I'd dreamed of for most of my young life. My little legs maneuvered me to the edge of innocence. I looked up at the giant red curtain. Thankfully, the shroud was close enough for my short arms to move, and move it I did, and freeze in terror I did. I saw the character from that advert, that bear-looking character, staring blankly ahead, his bass guitar slung, waiting to play the notes of my funeral. The drummer, a chicken-human hybrid character, had a maw that hung open in perpetual terror. The singer, Major Magic himself, gripped the microphone stand with veiny forearms that resembled Popeye's. His dark gray bushy eyebrows lent darkness to his wide eyes. The eyes were fixed forward, until his pupils sharply moved towards me. I screamed. To this day, I don't know what was real and what wasn't. I know that my parents grabbed me away from the scene of the crime. At that point, I had somehow gotten all the way to the backstage area. The rest of my family seemed really concerned, as I was obviously upset. I don't remember a whole lot after that. I still loved that pizza place, though. Fast forward a couple of decades later, and only one franchise has survived the countless pizza arcade kid chain restaurants. Chuck E. Cheese. It's fine, I suppose. Corporate, but fine. Even though the Rat King stands alone, he is on his last leg. Times change, trends change, and all that was new becomes old and outdated. I've never lost my love of this type of entertainment, though. I even worked at a few restaurants like these here and there. Everything from cleaning tables and washing dishes to assistant managing and even managing a local franchisee restaurant. It was all a great experience, but I'm currently at the proverbial crossroad. Continue on in just above minimum wage hell, or move on to another career. My path was altered one late night after closing down where I currently worked. The place was dead for most of the night. A typical boring Thursday evening that must have seen about 40 people. Surely there was no profit turned that night. I was finishing up the end of night sales, and they were worse than I thought. The only light in the office dimmed. I got up, stretched, and made sure the switch was on, which, of course, it was. I looked at the fluorescent tubes overhead like they would fix anything. And then, as I turned around, I saw him. Or something resembling a male human person. An outline of a person wearing a black suit, sitting where I had been sitting just a moment ago. I took a reflexive step back.
"Don't be afraid," the surprisingly deep voice said.
I always laughed when I read a line like that or heard it in a movie. It's always used in an obviously terrifying scene, like the character that it was said to would just relent. "Oh, okay, phew, I was freaking terrified, but since you said don't be afraid, now I'm not."
"Silence, please," the voice said.
I'm sure I was not talking out loud. I think he meant for me to stop talking in my head. I couldn't see any movement from the seated being. After a seriously uncomfortable 10-second silence, its right arm emerged. The black-suited arm finished at a hand pointed at the corner folding chair, the same chair I would use to interview prospective employees of this humble Pizza Palace arcade. For just one moment, I saw the suit move up briefly, exposing some grotesque scars on the being's wrist. Sickened and afraid, I did as I was directed. I sat. The light slowly started to re-illuminate. An outline emerged around his face. I sat transfixed. This guy was wearing a mask that resembled something like a rabbit. Two long, pointy gray ears. Eyes that were wide and black. His mouth was exposed, though, a perfect smile revealing perfect teeth. I couldn't pick which feature was more unsettling.
"I understand this is unsettling," he said.
It's like he read the last word from my mind.
"We've been watching you. I've been watching you. You don't know me or us, but it's time you get your promotion. You've earned it, my boy."
First of all, who is this? How did he get here? What the hell is he talking about? And what does he mean by, "they've been watching me"? And second of all, what the shit? A million thoughts swirled around my head with the force of a hurricane.
"Calm down, son, I know. It's always a shock, and you always have questions that are a mile long. I'll get right to it. Seems to be the easiest way. You love this work, yes? Do you love the joy of pizza, arcades, and entertainment? You've shown that you do, and we have decided to give you your own store. And not just that, you'll manage the whole district,
with several stores under your direction, in a prime location, no less. I fought the urge to burst out into some kind of manic state. This was so unnatural. I was speaking to an intruder. I had no idea what his intentions were. I believed at the time that I would be brutally murdered at any moment. But something in his demeanor... something. He could have killed me at any time. And how did he know about my history with showbiz, with Major Magics, or any other part of my love for pizza arcades? That's right. I think you know what you'd like to do. What do I do? What do you want me to do here? Like, for the job? Manage a store? I said, with more doubt in my voice than I would have liked. You're getting promoted. Let's be clear. You will have all your dreams come true. Every skee ball game, every jam band animatronic group will be under your control. Even at night, you'll get to see the eternal happiness shine in every child's eye that comes through your arcade. Would you like that? My eyes were starting to tear up. I hate crying. By the time I realized this, it was too late. I was silently crying like a blithering idiot. Good. Then it's yours. What do I have to do? I said, embarrassingly wiping my eyes. Is there a contract, negotiation for salary, or something like that? He scoffed. He threw his bunny-masked head back into the darkness, letting out a deep laugh that filled my insides with the coldness of a polar bear pussy. My boy, you never cease to surprise us. All you have to do is say please. Done crying now and finally seeing clearly again, I furrowed my brow and frowned. Something was just too good to be true here. It snapped me back to the real world. I put my left hand on the table to push myself up. Okay, I thought this was legitimate, but... Boom! The being's right hand, somewhat scarred, slammed his fist onto the top of my left hand, flat on the table. It brought me to my knees. The amount of force he generated from being seated was truly terrifying. I opened my mouth to scream in pain, but nothing came out. The suffering was overwhelming. He stood while keeping my hand pinned. Just say please. Please, yes, please! I screamed. His bunny mask got closer to me. The closer he got, the more confused I was by seeing his eyes. I don't think there was anything behind that mask. Just two black voids, but with barely visible red pupils, boring into my brain. The red dots kept focus on me. After an unbearable amount of time, he released me. I recoiled back to my seat, holding my hand. It felt like it would fall off, sore and on fire simultaneously. No visible mark somehow. Once more now, son. Say it. Please, I said. Mysterious Peter Rabbit stood up, adjusted his tie, and smiled. Fantastic, son! His entire demeanor immediately changed. The once dark, scary brute had now seemingly transitioned to a joyful advertiser that landed a deal to produce a small ad campaign for their local radio station. It reminded me of the Wizard of Oz scene when the black and white setting changes to Technicolor. I'm not in Kansas. Well, you know the rest. We're not done yet, he said, switching back to an ominous tone. My hopes of surviving this had become slim. I watched with horror as he reached inside his coat pocket, This is it. I was about to be wiped out with no one knowing where I was or for what reason. He slowly produced a key.
Keys to the castle, dear boy. You're taking over an already running arcade. In this envelope are the security codes and names of the employees. They know you are their new general manager and are so excited to meet you. Don't worry. They're all well-trained and will do whatever it takes to make this a huge success. This is where we part, my friend. I'll be keeping tabs on you, but I know you will not disappoint. Holding my hand, I still was cloudy. What do I do, though? Like, what do you need from me?
You'll know what to do and what not to do. We trust you'll make the best choices in the interest of our leader.
He pushed the envelope closer. Besides, the bunny man said, you already did what I asked. When in doubt, just say the P word. He smiled an impossibly wide white smile. I sat staring dumbly at the keys and envelope. It took a minute for my brain to catch up with what had just happened. When I finally could make my mouth work again, I asked what I should do, and he was nowhere to be seen.
6 months later. In my office, an office that should belong in a small law firm, not a pizza restaurant, I sit back and count the money. Oh, the money. The man in the bunny mask is a distant memory. Just then, a knock at the door interrupts my thoughts. I fearfully think to myself, did he hear me?
The team broke everything down, cleaned, and is ready for the show tomorrow, boss. Okay if we all kick out of here?
My de facto number two asks. Devin is the most energetic team member I've taken over here at the Rat King's location in Rancho Cucamonga. I've never been to California in my life. I moved across the country to be the GM of a Chuck E. Cheese conglomerate, 7 or so stores under my control. Who would do that? The man in the bunny mask, that's who. I don't know why I trusted him so much, but it's worked out. I hated thinking about him so much when he was just escaping my memory.
Yeah, sure, Devin, good work. We'll see you tomorrow. Remember to have the band ready. They've got performances all day.
We both giggled. We think it's fun to imagine the animatronics as a real group that busts their ass performing 3 to 4 times a night. The kids get a kick out of him, at least. Devin gives me a quick thumbs up and scampers off. His poofy blonde hair gradually disappears. Probably hitting the waves, I would guess. True blue California surfer. Going back to my laptop, I crunch the numbers. Goodness gracious, Ignatius. I've taken over. We're up 30% in the third quarter. Before I was given this offer, I couldn't tell you the difference between a quarter and 25 cents.
Another knock at the door.
Yes, Devin, what now?
Sorry, my boy. Devin has long gone. It's good to see you again. I sat frozen again. It felt like the exact same night, 6 months ago to the day. I didn't dare move. I could hear him shuffling closer, pulling out the wooden chair opposite my desk and sitting.
Now, son, no need to be afraid. I bring great news. And don't be silly. Turn around. It's okay.
I didn't move right away. Not because I didn't want to. I was just a little confused.
Turn around.
That does the trick. Confusion over, I am now facing the man in the bunny... No. He doesn't have a bunny mask on. A relief. Barely. It's some kind of mouse face. Dark heather gray, lighter gray cheeks with big front teeth and black whiskers. His real-life, hopefully human, smile opens wide behind the mask.
You've done great. The numbers do not lie. However, my heart drops. The mystery man that has changed my life stands up. The shadows created by the overhead office light make him even more menacing. You like this promotion, right? He doesn't let me answer. You wouldn't do anything to jeopardize that, right? You'd never take what isn't yours from the king, would you? I sit stupidly in my leather office chair. I feel silly having a leather chair as the GM of a pizza arcade.
The king? I say out loud, now hearing how odd that sounds.
The boss, I meant. Don't think we don't see it all.
Once again, I'm drawn to his masked face, the blackness where his eyes should be. The exposed skin area between his suit cuffs and gloved hands is still horribly scarred. I almost forgot about that disturbing feature.
Luckily for you, we still believe in what you're doing here. And we also believe that the mistakes you may have made will cease. Would I be correct in thinking that, son?
My body feels like it's on fire. How could they have known? It was barely anything.
Sir, I don't know what you're implying, but I assure you...
Too late. Before I know it, the mouse-masked man has thrown my head into my desk, straightening my right arm behind my body. One move, if he chooses to do so, and it will cleanly break. I can feel it.
So now, my boy, you have a choice. We'd hate to give you a demotion. You truly are doing a great job. Our brand is growing. Because of your passion at this branch, we have been able to indoctrinate several more locations. You should be proud. Here's your choice. Nod if you are ready to hear.
I'm sweating so much I can see a small pool of it forming where my face is pressed into the desk. I nod slowly, as painful as it is.
Good. Now, on to the real reason I've been sent to speak with you again. Hopefully we won't need to speak again for quite some time.
He releases his impossible stronghold. I'd guess he's no more than 5'5", maybe 150 pounds tops. It certainly doesn't feel like it with the death grip he just had me in. He straightens his tie, takes his original seated position, and motions for me to retake mine. I oblige, happily.
I'm here to tell you that we are adding another band member.
There's that emotional shift I've seen before.
Isn't that exciting?
I know. I can see you're just as thrilled as we are. This is the first time we have ever decided to add another member to Munch's make-believe band. And wouldn't you know it, we've chosen your flagship store to do it. It is the most successful one in the Western District, after all. You should be very proud.
You are proud, yes?
Yes.
Good. As are we. I think we have an understanding. Anything you'd like to say, then?
I know at this moment that I've entered into an agreement that can only end in misery. But I'm too deep in now. I don't want to answer to the king or anyone else. He's been merciful thus far.
Please?
He jumps onto the desk with the spryness of a 2000-era Tom Cruise.
You have got it, my boy. Our benefactors will be most pleased.
I put my head down, mostly because of the pain, but also because I just know something is very bad here. I ask the man what they need me to do. What do they expect of me? Silence. He's gone, isn't he? I look up. Hard yes. 2 weeks later. Life goes on. The pizza arcade is still thriving. My store in Rancho has even made the local news. Megan Tellis interviewed me about the comeback of the 90s-style arcade restaurant. Things were getting back to normal again. Last night was a stark reminder that nothing is normal. I went to bed late. I'd thought about what was said to me, the idea of adding another animatronic to the band. I asked what I needed to do, but was given the trademark vague response. Should I be seeking estimates on a new robot? Should I be reaching out to creative types to see what sort of character would best fit the band? So many questions. I needed to clear my head. Clear meaning grab another drink. After my last random assault, I found that the only medication to quiet the pain was just a finger or two of Irish whiskey. Great for mental pain, too. As I took my first dose, I put the glass back down on the kitchen sink. Warmth was already greeting my insides. Well, might as well double it up. Help with sleep tonight, you know. I justified this to myself almost every night now. Before grabbing the bottle for another, I heard a small tink from my kitchen window. What the hell? I said out loud. It was kind of deafening in my empty condo. I squinted my eyes toward the backyard. I expected to see nothing, hoped to see nothing. What I did see, I still will never make sense of. If it wasn't so ridiculous, I might have passed out on the spot. Standing in my backyard, illuminated by the streetlight, was Pasquale. If you don't know, Pasquale is the fan favorite drummer in our franchise band. I don't really feel like getting into the whole backstory. You can look it up if you want. The animatronic just stared at me. I returned the glare. What else could I do? An Italian robot entertainer for children had somehow left his post behind the curtain at my pizza arcade and was standing in my yard. After a Western standoff, my senses finally spoke up. This must be a prank, and not a funny one. But I couldn't let myself think that. I'm not close enough to anyone to get into some juvenile prank war with them. In the 5 or so minutes I stared at Pasquale, he did not move. His face was sad. Usually, his character is upbeat, with a permanent smile underneath his uniquely Italian mustache. Even in the dark, from quite a distance, I could see he was not smiling. What do I do? I decided to call the police. It might sound dumb, but someone stole and dumped an expensive piece of property on my doorstep, a piece of property I am personally responsible for. I had to take a minute to find my phone, very foggy after the excitement, and finally grabbed it off of the kitchen table. It seemed like something that had to be reported, and I had to get him back to the store somehow. Maybe the police can get a tow truck to bring him in for me. I wasn't sure. I returned to the window to get one more look at the oddest spectacle thus far in my life. As I put the phone to my ear, maintaining eye contact with Pasquale, his head slowly moved right to left and back to right. He was still there. What I saw next was only brightness and a female voice getting louder and louder. Sir? Sir? Sir! The bright light subsided. The world made a gradual re-entry to my optical stems. The woman directly over me wore a white shirt. The three or four men around her wore something darker. Shiny pieces of metal gleamed here and there when struck by an unseen light source. It took my foggy head a moment. I must have passed out, and EMS and the local PD were called. But who could have called them? Unless some nosy neighbor just happened to be watching me through my window as I fell to the ground, I didn't have an answer. "It's okay, sir. You're just fine. You had what looks like a panic attack, but no exterior or interior injuries, not even from the fall. You can sit up if you'd like." The female paramedic, who had a light in my face, brought me back to the world of the living. I did as she suggested. "What happened? Why are you here?" I asked. The police and a couple of other EMS-type personnel were already on their way out. "Hey, call's over. Let's get the hell out, right?" But she stayed. She said they got an anonymous 911 call that someone at this location was having an unknown medical episode. When they arrived, she said I was screaming nonsense about a robot and a pizza mouse. Just a bunch of nonsense. I really cringed into myself when she mentioned that part. I filled out the required informational sheets and signed a form that stated I did not need transport to a hospital or any further medical attention. Then it was time for bed. I had one objective as I sped into work down the beautiful 15 freeway. Make 100% sure that Italian asshole was still at his post, on stage, and ready to perform for the kids today. We usually let them go a couple of times during the week, but today we had a private party, and tomorrow we had three. So, we needed all the boys to be accounted for. Parents pay quite a pretty penny to rent out the band. I'd have loved to have seen that as a kid. A private party, with no other snotty, strange kids running in and out. I parked my truck shittily near the front of the store. I didn't care. I was already out and on my way through the front. I'm not sure if I even shut the door. "Whoa, boss, you okay?" one of the employees asked as I rushed past them. No time. I beelined for the stage. "Please, God, let all the members be present." I made it to the edge of the curtain. Flashbacks to Major Magics. Child me standing there, curious, hopeful. I see the Major make the slightest eye movement toward me. I shake that awful memory. Ripping the curtain away, there's no Pasquale. What the hell? His place is not bare, however. Another animatronic has taken his place. It looks like a knockoff character from the Sonic franchise. It has a blonde puff of hair, Wayfarer glasses, and a goatee finish its face. It has surfer-like shorts on and bare feet. A surfboard was stuck behind him. Looks like we've gotten a new drummer. As I stare stupidly at the new character, the employee I had blown past gave me a quiet tap on the shoulder. I jumped embarrassingly. "Geez, boss, sorry. I just wanted to see what's going on. Are you okay?" I rubbed my face, trying to make sense of what was happening. Yeah, I'm okay, Billy. Sorry to barge in here like that." Billy was a good kid. Does anything you ask of him. "I need to talk to Dustin. Has he made it in yet?" I ask, cautiously. Billy moves his mouth to one side like he's hesitant to speak. Sorry. I thought you might have known." "Dustin left. He left a note in the break room. Something about going through some personal issues. Weird he couldn't send an email or anything a bit more official than a handwritten note." "Hey, you don't look good, boss. Do you need me to do anything for you?" We can handle the private show if you need to take off for the day.
He looked sympathetic. I was starting to think that the deal I was given did not have my best interest in mind. I pretended I hadn't seen a sentient robot last night, and forgot the overall storyline I was currently dealing with involving a masked man that randomly shows up and assaults me occasionally. Too good to be true? Deal with the devil? Both seemed correct. No, I'm fine. I'm not going anywhere. I just need to get to the office. I thought to myself, why did we have a new bot? And why didn't I know about it? Billy stopped.
Hey! I yelled before he left my view. Do you or anyone else know about the new member of the band coming in today?
Billy shrugged and started to make his way to the kitchen. He gave me a confused look.
No, man, where did you hear that? He said. I was told. I received an email from corporate that we will be trying out a new member. We're the first store to do so. Just thought maybe it was here already.
Billy looked toward the sky like he was thinking.
Nah, man, sorry. I can call our animatronic guy if you want.
I told him that wasn't necessary and made my way to my office.
Okay.
Everything is going to be fine.
My panic attack must have caused some kind of break from reality, that's all.
Back to the day-to-day operations. Check some emails, ensure the pizza is ready for today, and all that good stuff. I opened my business email account. I only had one unread message. From the King's Council. 2. Redacted. Subject: The Next Evolution.
My boy, you've performed beyond our expectations. We knew you'd be the man for the job. Congratulations. All of your hard work and dedication have led to this next step. You've seen the new member of the band. Are you pleased? We're moving in a more realistic direction with the band members. The Surfer Bro will be a hit, not a doubt among us. We're so pleased that our benefactor is implementing that new band member tonight. You should be proud. The future of our brand stands on what happens this very night, my boy. This is what you've been working towards. This is what you wanted. The process has already started for filling the new member. Don't fight it. It won't be nice for you or us. We only require one word in your response to this electronic mail. I'm sure you know what it is.
Have a great show tonight.
P.S. Look in your right-hand drawer. How could I comprehend what I just read? I wished I knew what I was getting myself into. I knew what I had to do next. I just wanted to live and work in the world of pizza arcade happiness. I wanted to save the only moments from my youth that I enjoyed. I shakily pulled the drawer out of my desk with my right hand. I closed my eyes, took a deep breath, opened my eyes. It's what I expected. Damn you. A comically oversized red and yellow microphone. Lead singer quality. I just don't know why. I don't understand. Why put me in this position to manage a successful store just to essentially erase me? A sad, warm liquid stream fell down my cheek. This was bullshit. I sure as shit didn't sign up for this. Forget this. I'm gonna get in my truck and drive until the damn wheels fall off.
That didn't happen, though.
You know it couldn't have. And I knew it was already over. As I pushed myself out of my office chair, throwing it across the confined space, I attempted to face the door. He was there. The light showed behind him, displaying his massive outline. An impossibly pear-shaped midsection. Legs that were too big for a human. His head was massive, with large, sharp ears sprouting from the top. The lights seemed to have all but shut down. Just the red neon from the exit lights glowed. Even with the minimal light, I swear I saw this thing was wearing a purple shirt.
"This is so exciting! We don't do this often. The chosen are few and far between. I know you're confused. You were hand-picked. How did my consigliere refer to you?" "Yeah, that's right. My boy. There aren't many of you. You have been chosen to be a permanent part of the Pizza Time legacy. Children will always look upon you. They'll have fond memories that follow them for their entire lives. That's something you wanted, right?"
I was now on my knees. I wanted to speak, but was unable to. I painstakingly looked toward the microphone in my hand.
"Oh, don't worry about that, my son. Once you're inside, the programming will allow you to play every fun tune you want. So exciting, right? You only have to say the magic word."
I could already feel the transformation.
"Say it, my boy, and live forever."
"Please, please, Chuck E. Cheese, please."
You've been listening to Please, Chuck E. Cheese, Please by Blake Blizzard. You can find more of this author's work right here on our very own podcasting network. Well, listeners, that's it for this week. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you here at the same time next week to help grease the wheels on your Halloween festivities as they continue throughout the month. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to me. If you'd like to hear a premium, ad-free edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com. where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, including past episodes of this program, all of our other shows, and hundreds of standalone releases, all of them ad-free and available to download or stream. Thanks so much for your time and for giving our sponsors a try today. When you support our sponsors, you help support this show. And that means a lot to me. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. As for me personally, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, username Viking Guitar, and also on Instagram as Viking Guitar Productions. Until next week, listener, when we meet up once again atop the Horror Hill for yet another Dance with Darkness, I bid you good night. Sleep tight, listener, and whatever you do, if you hear scratching at your door, don't open it.
The darkness may have found you, but it's up to you to let it in.
You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's episode was hosted by, and its featured tale performed by, yours truly, Eric Peabody. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Nikki McSorley and Eric Peabody. Finalization by Craig Groshek and S.K. Brown. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to us today at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. If you enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, please subscribe to us to make sure you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on social media to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and our other programs. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every week. And don't forget to hit the thumbs up button to let us know how we're doing and leave us a kind comment. Lastly, don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archives and ad-free downloads of all of your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, you can hear more of my work on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights podcast. However, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.